Need a new set of optics? For more than a decade, Riton Optics has been providing optic solutions for hunters and shooters of all types and disciplines. Check out their Primal line for those products geared more towards us hunters. From binoculars and spotting scopes to your basic 3-9 scopes and longer range crossover models, the Primal line from Riton was made for hunters. Learn more at RitonOptics.com. That's Riton, R-I-T-O-N, Optics.com.
This is the OKest Hunter Podcast. Never pass on shooter bucks. That's just me, the freezer. It's your tag. You hunt how you want. This is OKest Hunter.
Hey, welcome back to the OKS Hunter Podcast. Coming at you from the OKS Hunter Podcast studio here in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. It's funny that I announced that on, I think, most episodes, and yet somehow every week someone's like, holy shit, you guys are from Oconomowoc? I'm right down the road. And that's always great to hear.
This feels like Groundhog Day. I feel like you said that last
week. I know, but that's what keeps happening.
There you go. Keeps You're a local
happening.
Celebrity.
Keeps happening. Keeps. You see what I did there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, if you're in Wisconsin, cheers to you. But if you're anywhere else, also cheers to you. We're in full swing hunting season here, pre-rut-ish. Starting to see some action.
It's starting to kick off. There's sign being laid down.
Depends on where you're at, I suppose. It's always slightly different from region to region, state to state, area to area. But this is generally the time. Like, Halloween is right upon us. And then you get in those first 2 weeks of November, and it's game time, baby. If you're hunting the rut, like me, like, that's the way to go. Unless you're an early season patternable kind of killer. It's a different story here for me. Maybe Greg. Mm-hmm. We're brought to you by Half Rack. Check out half-rack.com. Make sure to use code OHP if you want to save some money on your accessories, coolers. Get yourself a new, what's that called? A gun strap? Am I saying that right?
Gun sling.
Yeah, that's what it is. Gun sling. Not a gun strap. That's something different. That's not for this podcast.
Way to go, jockstrap.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to Latitude, Spartan Forge, Go Wild, all good friends of ours. You can use code OHP across all of those companies and save yourself some money. Spartan Forge is 20%. Everything else is, I believe, Go Wild's 10, Latitude's 15, Half Rack is 15. So check those guys out. We post to Go Wild regularly. We had a good call last week where someone was trying to learn how to saddle hunt and recommended checking out Go Wild for a post, and hopefully that went well. And Greg, did you try out the Latitude X-Wing? Or was that, who used that?
That was Jace.
Yeah.
I just set it in the tree for him, got him up the tree, but, you know, I got to put feet on it, so to speak, and just kind of make sure it was in there nice and solid.
A bit good.
Yeah, it bit great.
Set nice.
Yep, set nice. Jace seemed to really enjoy it.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, look at this. Oh, my God. Did you guys just say Oconomowoc? I swear to God, every week, dude, this happens. You'll see it on the screen in 2 seconds.
Maybe it's somebody doing it on purpose.
I don't know. I don't know this person that I'm aware of. I mean, maybe I do. I mean, we live here, but there you go. Oh, my God, you guys are on Oconomowoc. I'm just on the road. So I think I know who that is. Nonetheless, how fun is that? Anyway, we do have a guest on the line, so let's get into it. Buddy, thanks for joining us today on the show.
Hey, man, I appreciate the invite.
Hell yeah. It's exciting to talk to you in this context. I talk to you on a weekly basis in a different context. So, you know, wearing several hats in this world, and this is one of them. But why don't you just give folks a quick update or download on who you are and who you're with, and we'll dive into stuff.
So, Buddy Pyland, I'm with Ozonix. Been with them since we started the company in 2007 and kind of just worked my way up to the ranks. I'm currently the president of the company, in charge of just day-to-day operations. And on, as a side note, I get to go hunt and do what got me involved in the first place as just a love for bow hunting.
It's awesome. Where are you out of? Are you, what state are you in?
So I live just, down in Texas, in central Texas. Work out of the north side of the Houston area.
Okay. And how many states have you hunted since you've been with Ozonix? Like, are you getting to kind of put your paces through the country here or what?
Yeah, no, I've hunted Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, Oklahoma, Kentucky. Still got Colorado, New Mexico. So yeah, we got a few, several trips to Canada, Saskatchewan, Alberta, New Brunswick. So
it's all product. It's all product testing, right? Like that's what that's for.
Yeah. No, all product testing and getting to chase some unique animals.
What was your favorite part about Canada? What province was your favorite to go hunt in?
Saskatchewan, northern Saskatchewan. We hunt the provincial forest up there with every time I've been to Saskatchewan, I've hunted with Dean Partridge and Canadian Whitetail, and just the absolute coolest deer and huge bodied whitetail, and just a lot of fun. I've had the opportunity to go hunt with him four times and taken three really, really nice whitetail.
Cool. Yeah, those deer known for big, heavy, massive racks and bodies that make those racks look pretty small.
Man, those bush bucks, too, up there in the provincial forest, you know, it's one of those places where I think they have access to about 240 or 50,000 acres. I think he's got some more now, but when I was going, and so sometimes, you know, you're 20 miles from camp. Camp's 9 miles in from the nearest road. You take UTVs in. So when you then go another 20 miles deep in there, you're talking about some of these animals you may have never seen a human being. And on occasion, you get the bull moose that comes through and huge bears. Most of the time when we've been there, it's too cold for them. They're already hibernating, but they've got great spring bears, just phenomenal.
That's rowdy.
Yeah, and that's another animal that's got a pretty good smeller on it.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Well, yeah. So, like, good point, Greg. Way to transition us there, guy, into the.
It's not just a hat rack.
The olfactory. Being with Ozonix, I think we'll like cover off on Ozonix, like, holistically or naturally or organically as we go through the episode. But I figured I'd take this opportunity to just like really talk about reading the wind, because, you know, from what I've seen with Ozonix, I don't think there's any denying that it works. I'd love to hear a little bit of the origin. But overall, like, I think reading the wind is a critical tool as a hunter that you can have in your possession once you kind of like learn that. But it's the wind's going to do what the wind's going to do. It's going to shift, change directions. You got thermals pulling, pushing, you know, things are going down, up, depending on morning, afternoon, evening, hillside, not like there's just so many other variables at play that understanding all that is good to know and will help you as a hunter. I think this is like a plan B to some degree, as you consider what Ozonix can do. But I figure, talk about, I don't know, I guess a little bit of the origin story so people know what we're talking about. What is Ozonix? How does it function? I think your origin story is pretty cool when you consider that you've been with the company since 2007. That's a long time ago. You guys aren't some new kid on the block. Like, you've been here for a while.
Yeah, no, this will be our 16th season. And quite frankly, the hunting world is in the grand scheme of things, especially bow hunting, is not that big of a place. And if we were selling a $400 or $500 product that didn't work, we wouldn't be in business, because the word of mouth in this industry, in this community, is powerful. And so that's to your point. Ozone science, right? We didn't invent ozone. Ozone's been around forever, since the beginning of time. God created ozone, right? Every time lightning strikes the ground, it produces massive amounts of ozone. Somewhere along the way, somebody figured out that they could create ozone by taking high voltage electricity and cracking oxygen molecules and creating this chemical reaction that creates O3, which is simply three oxygen molecules, and which is becomes a powerful oxidizer. Now, it's been used in industrial applications forever to deodorize, to eliminate bacteria, to mold remediation, to remove smoke, and to kill virus and bacteria. Human odor is just bacteria. So at the point that Scott, our founder and CEO, had this idea, he's a dentist, he used ozone machines in his dental practice to get rid of odor and to sanitize surgical utensils. He had a special machine for that. And then he had one for purifying air. And he used a laser to cauterize wounds, and he loves hunting elk. And so One day he's operating on a patient, cauterizing some blood vessels in their mouth, and that smell of burning flesh and odor is, it comes out and it just disappears because of the ozone. And he has this idea. I wonder if this would work with animals, right? If it'll get rid of this pungent odor, would it get rid of the, would it get rid of my odor in the downwind airstream? So that was the genesis of the idea. And at the time when he did a little bit of research, he discovered there was no such thing as a portable battery powered ozone generator. Everything had cords to it. They produced massive amounts of ozone because the thought back at that time was it, you produce a lot of ozone and you shock situations to get rid of odor or mold or whatever it may be. So they went on about a 3-year journey of kind of researching this, filed for patents, was issued patents down the line. But at that point, he created a prototype, and in January of 2007, we went out and tested them on animals, and quite frankly, we were blown away. We knew it would work, had no idea it would work as well as it did. And that was the beginning of Ozonics.
That's pretty badass. I know of a story, just having done some research and so forth, like, mm-hmm. It might just be worth bringing this up for 2 seconds, just because I'm curious about it. But like, what's the deal with the FBI? Like, was that a real thing that happened?
Oh yeah. So our patents were held up and because they were deemed a national security risk. Ozone, again, not only does it destroy bacteria and odor, but it also, if it destroys odor, drug sniffing dogs can't smell drugs. They can't smell people. They can't smell explosives. And so at the time, the FBI and the federal government said, hey, hold on. Scott actually visited with them a few times. So, yes, very real story. It was kind of odd at that time. We're 3 years in and the hunting industry was still thought we were voodoo in a box, you know, because you can't see it. It's an invisible molecule. At the same time, the federal government's saying, hey, you work so well that we deem you a national security risk. And we're not sure we're going to issue these patents because of how this could be used adversely against the United States of America. And then on the other side, hey, there's no way this thing works. Right. And so it was always a really weird paradigm that we were faced with back then.
That's crazy. I mean, I'm glad you mentioned it because it kind of validates things. So in my mind, there's no argument that ozone doesn't work, but it's a lot of times it's referred to as, like you mentioned, you're the only battery powered portable unit from a patent standpoint that can go out into the woods with you, whereas others are connected by cords. And that may have changed a little bit in a 2023 world. Maybe some incumbents that exist in other capacity or what have you. But to that end, like, the woods is not a controlled, you know, Rubbermaid tote to some degree, or a room where you're shocking something. And so, you know, I think I don't think it's worth like jettisoning the wind altogether. You got folks like John Eberhardt that will say, well, I don't care about the wind. I don't worry about the wind. I've never watched the wind. I've never been a concern because I use Scentlock and it's carbon activated. It kills my scent. So therefore I'm not going to worry about it. But to Derek's point, who's not with us tonight, he couldn't make it in the pod. He's one of our other co-hosts. He mentioned on a podcast, I think a week or two ago, that it's worth worrying about the wind insofar as how the deer will use the wind to travel. So you have the deer using the wind to travel to some aspect, and then you have yourself and where your scent is going to go. So regardless of you and your scent, the deer is still going to use the wind to navigate or traverse a certain property or tract or what have you. So I think the wind direction does matter. It's just a matter of like, how are you leveraging it, and how are the deer leveraging it? So there's almost two parts of the equation that you need to kind of balance out a little bit to make your move on something. And on public land, there's hunters all over the place. Like, there's scents going all over the place. Like, those deer might be navigating around that. And so if you're the invisible one because of Ozonics, that might be to your advantage in a major way. If you're on private land and you are really tight on your exit and entry routes and you have your stands all preset and you know exactly which stand to hit based on wind direction of that day and so forth, like, you could be in a really strong position. But deer are still going to do what deer are going to do, which are deer things, which I think Derek, actually, to his point, had a deer come the way it wasn't he wasn't anticipating it coming, which was his weak side of his saddle. And so he couldn't get his bow over his bridge to pull the shot off in time without alerting that deer to his presence. So all the best planning in the world still goes out the damn window. Now that deer didn't smell him, but nonetheless, it caught movement and he hit his arrow on a branch and it was game over from that point. At I think the thing was only 10 yards away. That being said, buddy, like in your experience hunting all these states and doing all this, you know, quote unquote product testing, and someone that has been hunting for such a long time, like, are you still leveraging the wind in some way, shape, or form, or have you thrown it to the wind, pun intended?
So
I know there's a lot there. Great. I don't know. I said a lot of shit. No.
Great. It's a great question, right? And I'm still an advocate of I use the wind every hunt, right? Because I have to understand what the wind's doing. Because to your point, I've always looked at hunting, especially bow hunting, there's three major variables I have to try to manage. One, I have to control noise. If the animals hear me, they're not going to show up. But that's typically completely within my control. I have to manage the being seen, right? So I can remain still. I can hide in a blind. I can climb in a tree 30 feet. There's a lot of things all in my control. One thing I've never been able to manage was wind direction until Ozonics came along. Now, with Ozonics, what I get to do, one, when I understand what the wind's doing, I get to cheat the wind. To your point earlier, a deer's going to do what a deer's going to do. Adam Hayes from Team 200, one of the best bow hunters I've ever met in my life, a brilliant dude, knows more about whitetail than 95% of the people out there. And I don't know how many deer over 200 inches he's killed now. Free range deer over 200 inches. I think it was 5 at last count. And he said something to me years ago. He says, you got to learn to cheat the wind because those big deer are always going to use that wind to their advantage. So if I can find something, every product I buy in the bow hunting world is to either increase my opportunity or to maximize that opportunity or to create opportunity that maybe didn't exist. And I think Ozonics does that. If I can dump, so I'll back up. Do I use the wind constantly? Do I have to understand what it's doing and where it's going? Yes. Will I cheat the wind with my Ozonics and take chances that I wouldn't take without my Ozonics? 100%. Are there situations where before I had a very serious scent control routine, washing stuff, tubs, those type of things. If I tore down a set and moved it 100 yards in the middle of the afternoon because I realized the deer aren't moving where I'm at, I need to move down. That's where they're coming through. And I get hot and sweaty. I would have to go back to camp, start all over again. I'll take those chances now that I wouldn't take before because of Ozonics and because I understand the power of it. Again, hunting with it for the last 16 seasons. I know what I can get away with and not get away with, but if I have the time and the opportunity to use the wind to my advantage, I 100% will, and I use Ozonics to cheat that wind.
You got anything, Greg?
Nope.
Just making sure I give you opportunities here so I don't bulldoze you. But one of the thoughts I had, or the question I had wrong camera, is so the hunting public, Zach Fehrenbaugh, and several others. I'll just mention hunting public because they're widely known and everyone knows Zach because of his long, beautiful, luscious hair that I have none of. And like a couple of years ago, he talked about the strategy of like a bump and dump where he's using his stink scent to scent bump a deer, where he was intentionally letting his scent waft through an area to lightly bump a deer. So that deer is like, oh, I don't like that smell. I'm going to slowly get out of here, where they're not like, you know, running out of there like their life is dependent on it, like a hunter just stepped on them. It's a quite different approach. So he would get eyes on that deer and realize that, you know, that deer now has confirmed, oh, that bed worked for me. I smelled that guy. I got out of there. I'm now safe. I'm going to come back to that bed. Zach went back later that day or the next day and boom, killed it. So to that end, the question I'm getting at is, I don't know. I'm wondering, I don't have this information or intel. I don't know if you do, but like, how far does it matter to a deer if they're traversing an area and they pick up, cause there's going to be natural human scent. If you go to a state park, people are walking their dogs, walking themselves, hiking off trails. You know, if it's in a urban area, you have people cooking on the grill, you have people cutting the grass, there's gasoline. There's a number of other scents that are in an area, but for a deer, when Mark Kenyon did that hunt last year with, the urban hunter, Taylor Chamberlain and Eris.
Yep.
Whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. He talked about like, well, yeah, killing a deer in someone's backyard has got to be super easy. And it turned out it was just as hard as any other deer, because once you get into their quote unquote bubble,
deer are still deer and they have the same senses. They know.
Yeah. Deer, like all animals, I believe, have a safe distance, and that's based on their environment, right? Their natural cues. I talked with Taylor the other day, and just like he said, if you're in the backyard and that deer is getting that odor from where he believes that backyard is, doesn't bother him at all. But if all of a sudden you're in that green belt between the two houses in that no man's land, and he's coming up and he's all of a sudden starts smelling, and he comes unglued and turned inside out. Now, it may be at 40 yards instead of 400 yards, like some locations, but I do believe all animals have a safe distance, and that varies based on their specific environment.
Well, and to that end, the question I'm kind of getting at, and it might not be answerable, but it's a curious one, and I'll open up the phone lines too. So if folks want to call in with any, questions and so forth, like, please feel free to comment, call, because it's a live show. But, how far does human scent carry? And I think that you're right. There's a proximity to it where it's like it carries and they smell it, but it's not worth acknowledging, versus it's carrying and it's like, oh, this is too close for comfort, I'm out of Dodge. And then to that end, like, how far is ozone overlaying on that to help mitigate? Like, is there a windy day where the wind is too much where that maybe isn't going to have the effect it would on a light wind day or something? Or like a light wind or no wind day, your scent just kind of pouring out of you. I feel like that's where it would be super helpful in some instances. So there's, what to that spectrum of like no wind versus super windy, how are you leveraging an ozonics unit to help you in those situations? And what are the impacts that you've noticed or heard about from your partners?
Yeah. So the first thing I think to fully understand from people is that what you're worried about is not how you smell, right? You're only worried about the odor that leaves your body, because that's what the animal downwind of you in the downwind airstream is smelling, right? So what I've got to do is keep the airspace between me and the animal clean, right? Void of human odor. Or I have to reduce it or alter it. And ozone does all three of those things. In the perfect conditions, ozone in the right amount of time with the right amount of concentration mixed with my odor would destroy it all, and basically the downwind animal wouldn't smell anything. That would be in a perfect situation, and obviously we know the world's not always perfect. The second thing that happens is ozone, when it attacks a human odor molecule, it's so much larger, but it begins to unravel, and there are times that human odor molecule at a chemical level, at a molecular level, once it's been hit with ozone, it's still there and intact. It hadn't been completely destroyed, but it's different, right? The chemical makeup is different, so it smells different. And so you will see animals, especially whitetails, as curious as they are, that will smell something, they just don't know what it is. And then to your point, there'll be the third one where odor in that downwind airstream is being reduced, but some of it's still getting through, but it's reduced to a level that an animal downwind goes, oh, wait, I smell human, but it's within my safe distance, because I think that human to me at these concentration levels smells like he's 400 yards away, but in reality, I'm 20 or 30 yards away. Those are kind of the three things. And then there's always that, hey, some of my odor in the downwind airstream, because I can't control all of that, got through completely, and you'll see an animal get a full whiff of you and come unglued, turn inside out. And that happens. And it's because, again, imagine the best analogy I have for how you for keeping the downwind airstream clean is, imagine you're standing in a trout brook. You're fishing for trout in a stream in Montana. Now, when you watch that water move, whether you have a rock over here or a log over here or a bend in the stream, the water does different things. It flows around, it creates eddies. There's underwater terrain or obstacles that the water moves over. So if I dump green food coloring in that stream and that would act as my odor, you're going to watch that thing. It doesn't completely take over the stream. You'll watch it. It'll move. It'll flow with the eddies around rocks. Something. Now, if I take blue food coloring and I dump it in there and that pretend that's ozone, you'll watch places in that stream as it moves away from you where the blue and the green mix. And the blue completely overtakes the green and destroys it. You'll see other places where the two colors mix and they change color, and now there's something different. You'll see other places where they're still green, but it's getting through because the blue never touched the green. That's what's happening in a downwind airstream, and that's why it's so critical to pay attention to how you use your ozone, to understand what direction the wind's going, how you position your unit. All those things are critical. It's not just to throw it in the tree over your head and run it. You do have to pay attention to the environmental cues that are happening, what's the wind doing, and how I'm going to use that ozone to keep the airstream between me and the animal as clean as possible.
That's a good analogy. And it is just it's a mitigation effort. Like, it's not foolproof. And, you know, I think in a controlled environment, sure, it would be. But we're not in a controlled environment. We're in the woods where shit happens that goes not according to plan more often than not. And then you throw a human error into the mix, like or myself, and, you know, it's anybody's guess what the hell is going to happen. But, you know, reading the wind is important. Do you have any, like, Greg and I are huge advocates of using milkweed. I think a lot of hunters are. That's not unknown, uncommon knowledge. There's, you know, the people have now have, like, the little vaporizers that do a smoke stream. You have the powders or the poofy things.
Yep.
That's good for, like, you always have to, like, read the wind where you are. Like, Greg, when you and I went out to the property that you hunt, public property, there's a predominant wind. But once I got into the trees, it started doing a little bit different things. I don't know if it's because it's deflecting off other trees. It's died down a little bit. The canopy's protecting it, so on and so forth.
Well, like, there's a lot of things going on. You got wind. You have different disruptions of different trees, and maybe the cattails are a little taller in one spot. The sun's been hitting that area, the cattails or the grass, so that changes. You got a thermal uplift happening along with a weird backdraft that happens over the top of some of the taller trees. It almost creates a vacuum. There's a lot going on.
And we're not even talking about mountainous areas either.
No.
Which is a whole different beast in and of itself.
Nope.
And yeah, I don't know. I've always been the one to say the OKS hunters need the most help out of anyone. I'll take any advantage I can get to some degree. But it is fascinating. And we do have a question that came through. No calls on the line yet, but a question I'll pop up on the screen from Zach. He said, question for Buddy, what is his average hunting height and what type of average terrain? And if it is 30 feet up, it may aid in his wind going over the top of the animal. However, has he tried hunting lower? Has there been any testing at a lower height? And to that end, like Greg and I, there's a lot of times we'll hunt one, two sticks high because that's all we can get away with in an area to not get silhouetted or the tree super skinny or what have you.
Yeah, so that's a great question. And to answer that, I've hunted everything from brush blinds on the ground that I've had to build myself to 25, 30 feet in the tree. It just depends where I'm at. Like Iowa last year, Missouri and Iowa twice, I've hunted those, and some of the tree stands I had to climb into I'm not afraid of heights, but when you're climbing around in the dark at 30 feet in some of these trees, it gets a little wild. But most of the time, my place down here in Texas, we're hunting out of ground blinds because of it's in South Texas. There aren't that many trees you can really use or sit. I did recently get a new tethered saddle, and so I'm going to try some trees that I couldn't hang a tree stand in. But for the most part, ground blinds, absolutely on the ground in cedar, natural cedar blinds that we've built. So everywhere in between, because again, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where I'm at. It just matters if I understand what the wind's doing and I can keep that concentration of ozone in the downwind airstream to mix with what odor is leaving my body.
Yeah, that's good to go. That's a good answer. And thanks for the question, Zach. We do have a caller on the line. I believe this is our buddy Noah, this will be his third week in a row calling into the show. So Noah, you're live on the show. You got any questions for Buddy while we got him here about wind and ozone and all that jazz?
I actually do. I know it's my third week in a row, but
it's
actually
okay.
Do have
it's not a bad thing.
About this tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the call, man.
Yeah, so Buddy, because I don't know how to exactly word this great. Let's start with the situation here. You have a food plot. Where are you setting up in relation with the wind?
Okay, so I'm assuming that if you, like most of us, you probably have a predominant wind based on two scenarios. A scenario that's non-cold front, it's just typical wind, and then you have a cold front wind. You probably set your stands like that. When depending on what's happening, you're always gonna determine the downwind direction. So if you get in your stand, no matter what where your food plot's at, again, if you're on the corner, you've got your hunting area. If the wind happens to be blowing from the back of your neck straight into your hunting area, you're going to set that unit up like a lot of times you see it depicted, and dump that ozone right over the top of you and toward your hunting area in the downwind airstream. But if you've managed to get a situation where, hey, my hunting area, where my shooting lanes in the food plot, I'm catching the wind in my face, so the wind's coming straight at me. What I have to worry about is the animal that's going to circle downwind and come in behind me. So now I'm going to position my ozonics the exact opposite direction, always in the downwind direction. Because remember, wherever your odor's going is where you need your ozone. So it's really just constantly paying attention to what direction the wind's going and ensure that I dump my ozone in that direction.
But like when you're setting up, you're always looking for the wind in your face there from where you're trying to shoot.
No, not necessarily. So imagine a situation where you had the wind right when you got there, but then a cold front moves through. Now the wind switched 180 degrees and is blowing back into your food plot, right where you're expecting your animals to come from. But when cold front, they're going to be on their feet, they're going to come feed, and you don't want to leave, right? Sometimes for me, before ozonics, you're like, man, my hunt's done. I got to get down out of the tree. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to turn my ozonator 180 degrees back, and I'm going to dump it right down in front of me into my shooting lane.
To your point, though, Noah, like, this is where I'll overthink things completely. Like, you have some variable of control because it's your property. So you have, like, you are the only threat on that property, especially from a scent perspective. And you know where your food plot is, so you have a good idea where they're going to come to feed. But on public land, and on private to that end, like, is there bedding area behind you? Are they going to come from the bedding behind you to go out and feed based on the properties laid out? Maybe you don't have enough control to like deal with how it's laid out. And like, it's just always interesting because like where they bed in the thick stuff or on a hillside or what have you, like may not be, they may come from a downwind area to get to an upwind area or the other way around. Like it's just, I'll never stop overanalyzing that and thinking myself into a total oblivion of like, well, if I walk in on the property this way, my son's pulling across the whole thing. But like, if I hook it, maybe it'll be better. Or if I, there's just, and then you're making it, if it's your property, maybe you really know where they are betting. But that is an assumption I'm making a lot of times. And Greg, too, I think you're making assumptions to some degree of education. Like by and large, you probably know where they're bedded, but like on a alternate wind day, they might be in a different bedding location or a very specifically different bed. I don't know, man. It's just like a constant conundrum for me. Like it's just.
Well, and that is the beauty, right? Because the only place they can smell you is when they're downwind of you. And so as long as you're dumping ozone, again, you're at least to use your words earlier, Eric, you're mitigating the situation or doing what you can to mitigate the situation. Now, if you can completely take that out of play, great. If you can't, and you've got to put, I mean, we've all encountered those situations where we need to get in our bedroom because it's late season. It might be the only chance we've got on that buck. We take chances and for what you have to do is just understand where the wind's going and dump your ozone that way. And now for egress and ingress, we created the Kinetic Pack. For years, I would just strap a unit to my backpack and carry a unit in with me and point it toward the ground. But over the years, we developed the Kinetic Pack that we released back in 2016, that you mount the unit to the back, it blows right up from the back of you into, no matter where the wind's going, a molecule's lighter than the wind. So no matter what the wind's doing, that's where your odor's going, that's where your ozone's going. So we use those to walk in and walk out because, to your point, you can ruin a hunt on the way in before you ever get started.
Does that help answer your question, Noah? That's a good one. I know you've been.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like you, Eric. I overanalyze it like, oh, hey, it's in my face, but what if they come behind me?
Yep.
You know?
Yep. Were you out hunt tonight?
Yeah, I think that helps.
Or were you not, like the last few times you called, you were hunting. 2 times ago, you took a shot at
it. No,
deer.
No. I It's getting a little too dark after I get out, so it's tough sneaking in there.
Well,
after work these days, yeah. But I got the next few days off, so I'm going up hitting that cold front.
Cool. Good stuff. Outstanding.
Well, it's good to hear from you, man. Good luck. Well, I'm sure we'll hear from you. We'll hear from you soon.
Yeah, hopefully. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Good See ya. Zach, who had the question earlier about hunting hide, he said the reason he asked is he's in the steep Appalachian Mountains. He has a lot of thermal issues and or wind swirling opposite of what the wind is supposed to do. I also only hunt with two sticks
probably.
Oh yeah, two sticks. Good call, Greg. Way to read in between the lines there, buddy. That's why you pay the big bucks. So how's your season been going? Are you hunting Texas? Like, where else are you at this season? Like, what's going on?
Pretty much just hunting Texas. We had a really dry year, but a wet spring. So, well, let me back up. We had a wet spring, but about May, it just shut off. And I was really worried that our bucks wouldn't finish too well because I'm sure you guys heard Texas was just brutal this year. I've been here my whole life, and this is the worst summer I can remember, both from a drought perspective and from just a pure heat perspective. And the animals, most of my bucks finished really well because of the wet spring. So I've got some good ones and I've been chasing, but no luck. And we've got a bunch of big axes. I'm afraid that I missed the opportunity because they lose their horns year round. And the two that we were chasing hard, I haven't had them on camera for the last 2 weeks. So I'm thinking we missed that window. We're going to have to catch it again in about 4 or 5 months, 6 months. But we hunted Nell Guy down at the King Ranch. I recommend that for anybody if they ever get the opportunity. What a great, beautiful, tough, spooky bow hunting animal. A lot of fun. Last year I took a bull. This year I come close to a giant blue bull twice, 2 days in a row, same bull. Didn't get to seal the deal, but did kill a nice cow on the next to last hunt. And we hunted, I did finally draw Montana for elk, and we hunted elk. So that's pretty much my season. I'm going to chase whitetail the rest of the year and some javelinas. I got a buddy with a place down further south that's invited me out there to chase some javelinas. I've never killed one of those with a bow. Well, period. So that's what I got going on this year. I had a trip to Kentucky, but had to cancel it due to some business issues. And that may pop back open if there's an opening. I don't know.
It's cool. I know Greg and I are just Wisconsin bound this year. You did Illinois last year, Greg. Derek's doing Illinois and Wisconsin. Was it last year you did Illinois? Was it 2 years ago? Last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, maybe it was last year. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it was 2 years.
No, it wasn't last year. It was the year before.
Oh, gosh. Time's going too fast.
Yeah.
Which someone just commented this week went by fast as, you know, the F word, which I normally just say, but I just felt like my dad winces when I swear on the podcast. But then he tells us it doesn't matter. He listens.
Oh, we can swear?
Oh, you can. Yeah. I have a button for it, but I never push it. I don't know. It's probably good. It's a little beep button, but
that's fine.
Now the wind stuff's fascinating to me. It's a hard. There's a lot of different variables. Like we talked one episode about streams and rivers, how that sucks scent in, and does the current or the temperature or both. I don't know how you talked about the other day, Greg. How canary grass holds heat, holds coolness. Like so that creates a different thermal environment. I mean, there's just. That was a big
there's lots
wind
of,
relative to bedding and or food is the way it needs to be thought about, not just in general. And I exclaimed this like, I don't know, a week or two ago, like I never understood the wind because I just assumed deer would come from any which direction at any point in time. Like I never had a good line of sight as to like how the deer would travel a piece of property other than like a funnel or something. And it's just a constant shifting puzzle that you're always trying to put together. And as you're putting it together, the pieces are changing in your hands. So like where you thought a piece would go is now different. And I think Ozonics is like a really interesting tool, much like a bow is a tool or a broadhead is a tool or a saddle or a tree stand or your camouflage. It's another tool in the tool belt to help you with various situations, much like Derek is not thrilled with the saddle after the situation he encountered. Wrong tool for that particular job, apparently, right. You know? And I don't know, there's a caller in and we'll bring him on in just a second or her, but to the point of like, I like how you describe, buddy, the, it's not foolproof. It's not going to get everything. It will also chemically alter your scent in such a way that it may produce a different scent altogether. Or much like sound, when you're doing a buck grunt call, in some cases, like the volume you're pumping into this thing matters to mimic the distance that you want. Like a right. softer grunt versus a louder grunt plays into the proximity of distance from an audio standpoint. Much like ozone can mask or mimic the distance of that bubble. I never thought about it that way. I find that to be a little bit interesting. I think even if they're smelling you, if they're getting a watered down version of the human scent, maybe they anticipate you're further away and are less concerned. You know, that's really interesting.
Right. Yeah. No, and again, bow hunting is a game of inches and seconds, right? A lot of times I need him to take two more steps. I need him to take a half a step. I need 10 more seconds and opportunity. So that the difference, again, every bow product is either to maximize existing opportunity or to create opportunity that didn't exist before. Very few products do both. I believe that ozone does both of those things and ozonics does both of those things. So you imagine the right buck on a doe that comes in but he hangs up because she smelled you, right? Then you just lost out on an opportunity and you might not have ever even seen him, but because he's behind her and trailing her in and he sees her bust, you don't know the opportunity you just lost out on. And so that's why I think it's imperative that, that people understand how to, and I really liked the way you said that earlier but cheat the wind or mitigate the wind. It's always going to be there. It's learning how to use it to your advantage.
Yeah. Which is a seemingly never ending process. But, Zach, who was in the comments, is our next caller. So Zach, you're live on the show. If you got some other clarifying questions as you hunt the Appalachian Mountains, let's hear them.
Hey guys, sorry I'm bugging y'all to death tonight. I haven't called in forever.
Happy to hear from you, man.
Yep. Yeah. No, I wasn't trying to be. I didn't want to come off rude in the comments, and I only had like 200 characters to type comments. So no, I'm just in a respectful way. I was just a little skeptical and stuff, and that's why I was wanting to ask. And it's no disrespect at all. It's just the questions and not the lack of knowledge. So that's why I was just trying to gain more information about it. So I'm not out here preaching against something that I don't agree with, but I've never used or don't know the science behind it.
Yes, sir.
No, it didn't come off that way for the record, but that's helpful to clarify. And I know.
Yeah, my biggest issues is like fighting the wind is because I like trying to hunt some of the bottoms, but I don't have the big flat wide bottoms like Jake Bush has in Ohio and stuff. We have a lot of like really steep drainages, and then and I use Spartan Forge like you guys do, and it'll have a wind, and then it's good until you hit. And as soon as you cross into that bottom or get close to that bottom, it just starts swirling. It's going the opposite way. Mm-hmm. I'll be getting hit from the front and the back with wind at the same time. It's the weirdest thing ever. And that's before the thermals even start taking effect. So a lot of times, like it's super frustrating for me in the thing. And that's just part of the game. It's a fun frustration, but that was just kind of what I was saying with us. Cause like, but I do have a cool story if y'all got a second.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So I think I texted or I sent it to Greg the other day, but I took my oldest son out with me and for a public land hanging hunt. And he'll be 10 soon, but he's getting into like coming with me and tagging along on public land and putting in some miles and learning how to do it. And I'd been hunting this hub scrape that I found in the off season. And I have a camera on it, and I've not had any bucks come to it this year, but it's the same tree that's their licking branch on the scrape is also like a signpost rub, so it's just a fire spot. But all my pictures are nothing but does and fawns and maybe a couple bear. So, but every time I hunted it, my wind was swirling really bad and blowing back down into that bottom where the deer, they're kind of working their way out of that hub or that bottom. So with him, I backed up like another, it maybe wasn't even 10 yards. and my wind stayed a lot more consistent out of it. So I'm trying to think how to explain it. So it's a hub that's running east to west, and this is actually a flatter spot that I actually have to hunt. And when I say flat, it's not Midwest flat, but it's just flatter than the rest of the stuff I hunt. There's like a little saddle that they come out of, and that's where that hub scrape is. Well, we backed up like another 10 yards and our wind was a whole lot more consistent. But the cool part of the story is one of the bucks I have about a quarter mile away on camera. We actually had an encounter with him at like 52 yards through the trees, and he come up on the ridge instead of coming through that little saddle out of that hub. So I was pretty happy that I went in and hung two stands and hung the safety rope for my son, and me and him got up the tree quietly enough to not disturb him, because I think he was bedded just on the other side in that hub. And I'm hoping now that I know that, I can maybe move in a little closer on him. But I thought it was a cool story that I had my kid with me and got one of our shooter bucks within very, very close to range.
No, that is awesome.
What'd he have to say about it, being 10?
Oh, he was pumped. He was absolutely stoked about it. He worked his way out, and then I tried to hit. I'm not a big caller at all, but I did have a little can caller with me, and I know it was a little early for the doe bleat can, but I was like, well, if he's walking away from us, I don't have much to lose. So I hit that and didn't think he came back, but eventually he's like, Dad, I see a big doe, a big deer. And I caught a glimpse of its belly, and I was like, I don't think that's a doe. And then he raised his head, and I seen that freaking rack, and I was like, hey, that's our buck, buddy. And then he was watching him through the binos, and I was hit the call, and he would look in our direction, and then he would go right back to eating. So he wasn't very interested in our BS can call, I guess.
Not yet. Give it a couple weeks.
Yep, give it a few weeks.
He will be.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Good for you.
Yeah, and appreciate it. I hadn't called in forever, so I figured I'd call and bug y'all and comment and everything else. So.
No, man, you're never bugging. It's always good to hear from you.
Yeah, for the record, no one is ever bugging us. It's the reason we got the number. I wouldn't put it out there, you know? Here's a number, but don't bother me on it. No, it's all good. We love to hear from our listeners. It's a two-way dialogue, and I think that's what
man,
separates us. So.
Keep me apprised of how it's going. I love getting your messages throughout the week, so.
I appreciate it, Greg. Eric, have you been in the woods much? I've not seen a whole lot.
Oh, Greg and I were bickering about that before we hit the record button, before Buddy joined us. Greg's been out 6 times, which is not nearly enough for him. You want to guess how many times I've been out?
I can't. I'm trying to remember the stories. I think once, maybe.
Yeah, well, you're right. Once. My wife is stiff-arming me from being in the woods, and not in a mean way, but last week was her birthday, and we had a wedding, and the week before that was our anniversary, and this week's trick-or-treat, so, like, I got rotation planning, but I overdid it last season and the season before with 3 children under the age of 6, so I gotta recalibrate my priorities.
That's poor planning, Eric.
It is. I underestimated how my obsession with this stuff would grow, and my wife grossly underestimated it. So now we've got 3 kids. I got to just be dad and husband first, and
Bill.
I'll get my time, and I'll either make it happen or I won't. But
you got some. I got to save some of those sick days up, and you're not feeling too well today. So
yeah. Well, she won't buy that. So
it just happens in a minute. That cold front and that correct wind. Yeah. Now Greg's over there in the corn, like ready to reach out and touch him.
Yeah, he was. He was just,
man, it was a close. It was a close encounter. It was crazy. Like 5 yards away, and I could hear the deer breathing. I could hear it crunching on corn, but I couldn't see it. And so I just happened to.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I couldn't see it because the corn's tall and it's thick. So I just happened to look up and I saw corn stalks moving. I'm like, man, that's close. So I had to get down.
Just tackled it.
Yeah, just about. So I got down on one knee and like looked real low. Then all of a sudden I saw a leg and then another leg, and I saw a chest and I saw an eye and a nose. I'm like, oh, there it is right there. So I'm kind of looking around and it's feeding contently. And I found an opening probably about 3 inches wide where I could see the vitals. Well, let's see if I can make something happen. I got the bow. I kind of moved around. Of course, I made a little noise crunching on corn leaves, and the wind had picked up just at the right time. The deer didn't really spook at that point. Came full draw with the bow and trying to line up that opening again and find the vitals. I couldn't find anything. I must have moved just 2 or 3 inches to the right or to the left, and I lost the opening. So I'm looking, and all of a sudden the deer must have like either caught a little whiff or just decided maybe that crunch over there didn't sound right, and it bound off. It never blew. It just took off like a freight train through the corn and let down, and that was the end of it. But I could hear deer moving around in the corn 20, 30 yards behind me. So they're still there. The farmer walks that property often with his dog, so they're kind of used to some human presence. So that could be why that deer never blew at me. She probably figured, well, there's got to be a human somewhere.
Yeah, that's not bad. Another encounter I had this year, but I started off the season with my great-grandfather's recurve that was given to me. It's an old Beard and Pearson that's like 70-something years old. And I got a new string and arrows and stuff for it and practiced with it. And I set one set not too long ago. It was less than one stick high. I actually set my tree stand standing on the ground. And I had two fawns come out of the bedding area that I thought the day before there was like a dozen does piled up. And I was just there to get a doe, but meat hunt, whatever came. And had that recurve, and I want to kill one deer with it and then hang it on the wall and be done with it. And because I didn't know that anybody even had that bow. But I had two fawns, and I think they lost their last spot while they were walking up the hill, so I didn't have the heart to kill them because my dog weighed more than they did. But I had both of them right at two. It was probably three, maybe 4 yards, and they were crunching on acorns and stuff and walked. And they were suspicious of me because I was wearing completely – I listened to your last week's podcast with the camo and stuff, but I was in completely solid colors and everything, and they were a little suspicious. I don't think a mature buck would have – I could have got away with it, but – it was pretty cool having them that close. And I think I put a reel out there. It's on a GoPro, or it's from a GoPro. So it looked like they were a little bit further away because that wide angle, but, it was pretty cool having two deer that close to me. And, like you were talking about, Greg, just almost, you can almost reach out and touch them and you can see them and hear them breathing and everything.
Yeah. That's what it's all about for bow hunting anyway.
That's right. Well, thanks for the call, Zach. We appreciate you, man.
Yeah.
No problem.
Good luck to you.
I'll stay classy and, you got to use your coaster there, Eric. You're raising a barn or something.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Y'all have a good night, man.
All right, you too, bud. We'll see you.
Take care.
That's fun getting to hear from people. He's out of
Virginia.
Virginia. I was like, where the hell are the Appalachians? The call is here from Wisconsin. So in any given episode, we'll hear from people all over the country. It's kind of cool.
But, it's awesome.
Yeah, bow hunting is, like you said, a game of inches and seconds and close proximity. And I think what you guys have done with those Onyx is pretty cool, man. Like, the fact that you've been around since 2007, like, if I'm not mistaken, Scott started everything out of the garage. Like, that's the American dream to some degree. Like, and more specifically, that's the hunter's dream to start a business out of the garage in the hunt space. You can go do what you love more and, like, be a part of it. That's something. That's definitely... really, really exciting.
Yeah, no, I can't complain. It's been awesome. I didn't start bow hunting until late in life. I was 32 years old before I got my first bow, and it took me 5 years to kill my first buck. And as a matter of fact, I killed the first buck ever taken with ozone. So, and all 116 inches of him hanging on my wall, and he's my favorite buck because, again, I worked. Anybody who's bow hunted knows. In five years, I did everything I could to kill a buck, and that's how long it took. And it's a neat experience. That's why he's my favorite.
Yeah, it's not always about the inches. It's about the memories made. And
that's it. Yeah, bow hunting's hard. I mean, you hear people say that, but I think that's why a lot of times people are attracted to it, you know?
Yeah, and some people make it look easy, but some people are doing it like it's their actual career. You know, I know... our first caller Zach mentioned Jake Bush, who's in Ohio. He does it full time.
Yeah.
You know, the hunting public guys, they do it full time. They're in the woods more than most. And when you only have a certain amount of time, like Greg and I talking about, but the combined number of hunts we've had this season is 7. Like you only get so many opportunities. You want to make sure when you get those opportunities that you're not, you know, hoping on a prayer for the wind to do what you needed to do. I only have so many properties I can bounce around to in close proximity to my house. And the predominant wind is not favorable for a number of them. It just isn't. And I'm not saying I'm going to cheat the whole entire predominant wind direction, but like I need a slight shift and I can maybe make a move.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, you know, sometimes somebody saves up all their money. They, you know, I spent 5 years buying points every year. Send my $52 in to buy an Iowa point because I dreamed of hunting Iowa for the last 15 years. It's been a dream of mine. And finally got off my butt and started buying points. Got the points. Now I could drive all the way up there, 5 years worth of effort, and get there and have the complete, in which it was the first day we were there, it's like 77 degrees. We're completely wrong wind for the stands, just not Iowa weather for the rut. And if I didn't have my Ozonics, my hunt would have been ruined. You know, you're up there sweating, the wind's blowing the wrong direction. As it was, had a great hunt that evening. The next day, a front moved in and had a killer hunt that day. It was on three booners. Never had any of them come close enough to shoot, but watched them all afternoon. We had one out in the field. Just amazing place. And then I took a nice buck the next day. So it's a hunt could be ruined. You hate to run into a situation where you put all that time, effort, and money into it, and then because you get up there and the weather won't cooperate, and you have no way to mitigate or manage that. So, and I think Ozonics gives you that, again, that tool in your arsenal to help address those situations.
That's a good way to put it. And the things that are in our control that are ruining a hunt more than anything else, and I'm speaking from experience, a cell phone. put the fucking thing down. Like, there's my swear word for the episode.
That is an absolute truth.
Ruin a hunt in one word, smartphone. Like, because we're using it for a tool. We're all the wind, the land nav, the navigation, the this, the all the stuff. Texting your buddy, taking the pictures, doing the thing, like keeping yourself from getting bored out there. And that's the damn very thing that'll ruin it more than sleep in some cases.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And when you look up and there's your shooter staring at you and you're holding your phone and you're
just totally unready. Yep. And there's just a lot of the TikTokers and YouTubers and the Instagrammers and the influencers that are just, hey, look at me, I'm in my tree stand. Oh, shit, there's a deer. Like, how many deer did you not see because you're talking to your phone or taking a video? And this is a note for myself as much as it is for anybody. Cause, you know, I actually really enjoy taking pictures too. I love like editing photos and stuff. It's just a nice pastime for me. But there comes a time when it's the rut. And if you're putting the time and you're taking PTO and you're away from your family, like, do everyone a favor and put your phone down so you can maximize and make the best of that time. That's step number one in a lot of our, it's in a lot of our control in this day and age, but we've all become pretty addicted to those devices. My PSA for the week is put your phone down and go hunt.
It's not a bad one.
I'll say that to Greg.
He's
texting me at the most inopportune moment. It's usually like someone send me like a trail cam photo. Look at this buck. I'm like, oh yeah, look at that buck. I'm in the woods right now. Look at where I am. And it's like, shit, there it goes. One more question. Since we got you here, it's Facebook users, which means they're watching in one of our Facebook groups, likely the Shooter Buck Club. So it's not showing me who they are, but they said, what would y'all say is the best scent killer and cover scent to get in y'all's opinion? So scent killer, ozone, Ozonics.
Yep.
Like you guys have, what I think is interesting about you guys is I could go, what's it, Scent Crusher owned by Faradine. I could buy a Scent Crusher bag, but that's a plug-in unit and it's for a bag or a tote or whatever I'm going to use with that. Versus yours, I could use the same way and have the battery to bring it out into the field. So it's if I'm going to spend the money on one, I think yours makes a lot of sense because you're maximizing the investment and you're getting more purpose out of it. Sorry, I'm answering the question for you, but like, yeah.
Yeah, we've got closets. We've got the dry wash bag for treating your gear pre-hunt, post-hunt. Absolutely.
And then the cover scent, I don't know. Like, I love the dirt stuff. Actually, at this point, I think the dirt stuff doesn't do shit for the deer. It does a lot for me. It's nostalgic at this point. Same with that green goop soap. It's like you go to deer camp. That shit doesn't actually work at all. In fact, I probably get more BO and stinky because it's not doing
honestly,
any job.
If you can smell the soap, if it all has a distinct odor, right? The stuff with the red bottle, the stuff is green. All of it has a distinct odor.
Yeah.
It may not be as pungent as like the typical Flower. Perder Head Axe. And Shoulders, Axe body spray, you know, Dark Temptation, your favorite, but it still has an odor. If you can smell it, you can guarantee that the deer are going to smell it.
Yep.
Bottom line.
But to that though, there is the nose jammer stuff. It smells to me like vanilla is how, like, I don't know if that's not actually.
Yeah, and that peak,
but
that,
like, people swear by it because it's like such a.
Well, it piques their curiosity and it, some may think it calms them. Tough to say, but they want to smell it. They want to know what it is, or it smells like some kind of food that they like.
So, and there's other cover scents. Like if you're hunting corn, you can get a corn spray. If you're hunting pines, you get a pine spray. I think all those things are things you can do, but nothing, there's no silver bullets, guys. There's no silver bullets.
Honestly, if you know you're hunting a marsh or whatever, and it's got a lot of willows and there's a lot of willow leaves and cattails and stuff, take a bunch of that stuff and put it in a tote with your clothes. If you don't want to use an ozone killer, use that. And at least it's absorbing some of the right now natural scents, but it's so temporary.
Yeah, because by the time you sweat up and it
all
once,
you
got to
do
is done.
Take a walk in the stuff, and you're gonna stink.
You're,
so
you're still breathing and sweating.
Yep, exactly.
And like the point of like, oh, walk in without, and then put yourself. Well, what do you think's in your bag? You know, your sweaty clothes.
Yep.
You think that bag's foolproof? Maybe put in a garbage bag and then the bag. But you're just at some point you're putting in so much effort, and I think it all again you're just again
exhausting.
Mitigating. You're mitigating.
Just go deer hunt.
There you go.
The Whitetail Adrenaline guys. When we had Jared Scheffler on. Our first ever episode, you know, 300 some odd episodes ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was, he told a story of how, like, he was doing all the stuff, buying all the scent stuff, buying all the right camo, setting up a tree spot, so on and so forth. And then his car broke down. He was covered in gasoline and oil, wearing blue jeans and a white t-shirt or something like that, and thought, well, hell, I might as well go hunt while I wait for the tow truck to show up, whatever he had going on. And he said, I didn't kill the deer that day, but that was the best encounter I'd ever had with the biggest deer I'd ever seen. And I didn't do any of this stuff right. I hunted from the ground smelling like car oil and gasoline. And I was within, you know, yards of this big giant buck. And, you know, so it just goes to show. We harken back to like grandpa times or great grandpa times. Plaids and blue jeans and shit. Like, of course, you could smoke a cigarette in the stand and you could probably get it done. But am I willing to take those chances? No, I'm going to do some stuff. And everyone's got their like metric of like what their moral compass allows or their ethics or their level of challenge that they want to pursue. Zach mentioned using a recurve or a longbow, whatever it was, a trad bow. There's just such a spectrum of what every individual hunter wants to do. It's very different from everyone else. And like we always say, it's your TIG, it's your hunt. Hunt your own hunt. It's like whatever you're going to do. Like don't judge other people for what they're going to do.
Yeah.
All right, I'll stop. just, anyway, buddy, thanks for hanging out with us. What is with these thumbs on the screen? You seeing this now? It's giving me a thumbs down. Did someone do that? Am I doing that? Like, I think it's like, see, oh yeah, it's me. Somehow I thought my face was a thumb down. You see that? That's weird. I don't know what that's.
I didn't
all
about. Know what that was.
It's a new thing. I'm not sure if I like it. It's just doing it on its own. I don't know how to turn that off. Anywho, thanks for being on the show. And
well, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to just chat about something the shared love for whitetail deer and bow hunting and in general.
Yeah, and what's the website? Because I want to make sure we send people to the right place. Like, there's always the time, right?
It's ozonixhunting, all one word, .com.
Boom, that's
fair
it.
Enough.
Rock so, on.
Come visit us. We got everything you need.
Cool. Well, I'll end the live stream. This will be in podcast land tonight. That's how it works here. If you want to hang out with us for just a minute to debrief, we'll chat with you and then we'll let you on with your night. So thanks everybody for tuning in.
See ya.
Thank you.